Hi, and welcome back to Windows 8 UX Design Jumpstart. In this session, we're going to talk about the touch language in Windows 8, and it's really something special. What I kind of love about the touch language is that it isn't too complex. It's actually pretty simple and really clever. A lot of the actions that you need to navigate and to cause actions in your apps and in the start screen and just in your personal Windows 8 environment are very simple and easy to remember. I'll walk you through some of the touch language. We've already been through a lot of it over the last couple of days. So if you have been able to join with us, you've already seen the charms bar, the apps bar, pulling tiles around on the start screen, selecting, those kinds of things. But I'll walk through those in even more detail, and you can really see my finger on my monitor as I touch it. And so you'll be able to follow along with exactly what I'm doing. But I'll also cover keyboard and mouse, and also a little bit of pen. A lot of users don't have a touch screen, or a lot of power users really prefer to bounce around with a keyboard or a mouse. And so who can blame them if they're that much faster with it? So let's go ahead and look at designing for touch. It's really all about creating a common language. The mouse was an invention that created a language all of its own. You have right click, you have left click, scrolling. It really created a common language that the world eventually learned. And to break away from that is a big deal. And so we're creating a new language with touch that everyone needs to acclimate to and speak fluently so that they can get around in any number of touch screens wherever they are. Right. If you have a person that speaks a new touch language or that one language, and then you have another person that can speak that same language, they can communicate really successfully. The more people that you add to that lingo system, the more you can converse with your community around you. And then if you continue to add voices that are speaking the same language from around the world, you end up with a language that everyone is speaking very fluently. And they learn it once, and they can continue to communicate in whatever Windows 8 environment they land in.
Yeah, it's just amazingly powerful. You can learn these simple gestures just unboxing Windows 8, and then you know that language for every app that comes along, every app that's added to the Windows Store.
Exactly. So let's talk about specifically the Windows 8 touch language. You learn it once. When a person first opens Windows 8, it's a new experience. It's a new environment, and it's something that they have to get used to. But honestly, it takes about one try through finding the charms bar, learning what the app bar does, and then even exploring and touching tiles and moving them around to figure out exactly what they're getting into. Once they have learned that language, they expect to see it, and they expect that behavior to be repeated everywhere. They expect all of the apps from that ecosystem to speak the same language. And so you, as an app creator, want to subscribe to that language as well and create an expected experience for users. You want to give them a sense of confidence that what they do is going to achieve the result that they're expecting. Following this ecosystem and this language helps you focus in on what your app is supposed to be great at. You're not having to think through how to interpret how a user might find a way to favorite a recipe. They already know. Users already know that they can select that recipe in context, and that app bar is going to pop up, and they can favorite that recipe. They can do it without having to think about it. It's also built into the platform control. So a lot of the templates that are available for you to download in the code from HTML5 to XAML, you're going to get a lot of those animations for free. It's already built in. There are content, I'm sorry, that was talking about animation specifically. It's so amazing. But a lot of the touch controls that go into, and I'll talk about animation in the next session, but a lot of the touch controls are built into the system. Selecting, swiping, panning, all of those kinds of touches that are really fluent on the start screen are also within the rest of the system.
Yeah, you can just focus on the thing that your app is going to do, and all those touch gestures are just built in.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's explore Windows 8 just a little bit and look at the touch environment. You can see here I'm simply panning from left to right. We talked about that a lot yesterday. That's how users are automatically going to start looking at content through your app. They're going to pan from left to right. This is a really natural and inherent gesture. Mm-hmm. Even my four-year-old niece can immediately learn that something is panable because she touches and she gets immediate visual feedback and she learns immediately that panning is possible.
Right.
You can also pinch to get semantic zoom, and you can reverse pinch to come out of semantic zoom. It also, that operates the same way in the Photos app. If you pinch within the Photos app, you can enlarge those photos and see. Press and hold to learn. Chris showed us this yesterday. If I want to find out what a tile can do, I simply hold the tile and I get a visual response. And you can see that little check mark. I'm going to touch right up at the top. You can see that little check mark tells me that that tile is selectable. Mm-hmm. And so now I know that I can tap and drag to select that tile. And once I do that, I get a plethora of app bar options. So again, that's a gesture that folks are going to be expecting in your app. They're going to be touching and pulling down all of your images and everything that they think that they can select. Another thing that you can do with tiles is swiping them. You can pull past that threshold of the selection and move that tile. And I can move it over to here. I can rearrange my start screen in this way. And this is how folks can move your tile around on your start screen and move it to a more prominent position.
And it's a great example of direct manipulation rather than providing like a selection and arrow keys to move the tile around, or even worse, you know, having little navigation buttons on the tile and cluttering it up. Just give them direct manipulation wherever possible. You pull down, they learn, they start moving it, it animates.
Exactly.
It's a great experience.
And that immediate visual feedback confirms that they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Another thing that you can do is combine some gestures. One really cool one, if you have a really long start screen, if you love apps and you have several of them, you can pull down that app past the selection threshold, and then with your other finger, move to the end of your start screen and drop that tile.
Right.
And so you can really combine gestures to create a little bit more of a complex language. But if you think about it, it's doing exactly those two basic touch gestures. You're pulling it away to pick it up, and then you're panning with your other finger, and then moving it to place it.
Yeah, and I mean, you're still using the touch language that everybody knows from Windows
8. Exactly.
Chaining those two items together is very, very natural versus trying to give them some new touch gesture they have to learn.
Exactly.
You know, just for that particular action. And heaven forbid you tried to do that in your app where you're giving them a new touch language in your app. It's going to be kind of frustrating to users because they're going to have to learn these gestures just for your app rather than just using what they know about Windows 8.
Exactly. And another thing that you have picked up on, I'm sure by now, by using Windows 8, and even if you've been able to go into a store and play with Windows 8, even if you haven't been able to sit down for any length of time, you've noticed that there is the Charms bar and that there are the app bars. And those are consistent experiences that users learn immediately. Right. And the Charms bar is accessed simply by swiping from the right of the screen. You can swipe to bring it on, you can swipe to dismiss it, or you can swipe to bring it on and do a light dismiss. That means you're tapping outside of that menu to get rid of it. You can also swipe from the top or the bottom of your screen to get that app bar. You can see here that the app bar matches the rest of my system. You can see this All Apps button right here in the bottom. So if I tap that, I get all of my apps. And speaking of tapping, there are a couple of different really intuitive actions to that are tied to a single tap or a tap and hold. Again, we showed you tap and hold to learn information there. And I can show you again in the settings menu. If I tap and hold, I'm going to try to put my not to put my computer to sleep here. But if I tap and hold on that power button, it did not do what I thought it would do.
Actually, tap on it, it'll show you the menu, then you can tap and hold.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yes. Thank you. So I tapped to get my flyout menu here. And then I tapped and held to get my tooltip. It says closes all apps and turns off the PC. We're going to move off of that.
Just scrub off of that.
Do not
do that.
So I just dragged my finger off and did not complete the gesture. But of course, something that we've been using over and over again is a single tap.
Yeah.
And in Windows 8, a single tap activates something. And so you can see I did a single tap on the power button to get that flyout menu. Yeah. I was so afraid of turning off my computer that I forgot that it was a single tap to get that flyout menu. But also a single tap launches your app. And here I've launched Contoso Cookbook with a single tap. Yeah. And I knew exactly what to do to get into my app. Yep. Within Contoso Cookbook, we continued that language. We really, again, didn't want to steer away from something that users have learned already. If you continue to teach them new, more complex gestures that don't align with something they've already learned, it's going to be a frustrating experience for them. And so aligning as closely as possible as we can within Contoso Cookbook makes it a super intuitive experience.
Yeah. They already know how to use your app.
Exactly. We have tap and hold to learn that, in fact, this tile can be selected. And so I'm going to tap it and drag it down. And I've selected that tile. Notice that my app bar popped out. Mm-hmm. I have a few options down here that are directly associated with what I just selected. Mm-hmm. I can soft dismiss on that. I can pan within my app. I can also pinch to get into semantic zoom. We're using the same language that we use on the start screen. Mm-hmm. Tap to activate. And if I want to get into the Chinese cuisine, again, I can just tap to get right into there. I can tap one more time to get into the recipe detail itself. We also put effort into, as Chris showed you yesterday, if you didn't see it, there are single taps to leave a rating for a recipe. And then you can see on the screen here, you can simply tap to get into the content and leave a review.
Right.
Awesome. I'm going to use that word all day today. But these languages that are built into the Windows 8 system create just a really confident, consistent experience. Getting back into the presentation, you want to leverage that touch language, again, to subscribe to the language that Windows 8 has created. Don't go outside of that set. Don't try and create custom gestures just to be different. It's just frustrating for users.
You'll have to teach your users how to use it.
Exactly. So there are some truths to how people use touch devices. Touch inherently is sloppy. Humans, I like to use the word, humans are imperfect.
We're organic, right?
Exactly. We need a little bit of a threshold for human error, if you will. We talked yesterday about panning and how forgiving panning is. It really picks up on the intention of a gesture. And Windows 8, again, has worked hard to pick up on the intention of a selection versus a move. So grabbing a tile and moving past the threshold of selection into the state of moving that tile. There are only two states in touch. There's touch and there's no touch.
Right.
We don't have hover states. We don't have instances of buttons having a different identity with a mouse hovering over it. Right. You have two gestures, and so you are either touching the screen or you're not touching the screen. And that calls for a really simple touch language. Try to avoid using 10 fingers to make a gesture happen.
Right.
Keep it to as simple a gesture as you can. Sliding is greater than tapping. It's easier for us to perform. This goes back to that human error kind of syndrome of if we try and tap, chances are we're going to move our finger just a few pixels on that screen. Yeah. And so, again, Windows 8 has considered that threshold and made that tap a really successful event. And then, of course, it's made panning a really successful event as well. You can have multi-simultaneous inputs. So again, like I mentioned, you can put 10 fingers up there and have your app respond to those 10 fingers. But you can also subscribe again to the really the more basic language that users are learning quickly and already expect in the Windows 8 environment. And when we get into accessibility, we're going to talk about how utilizing more digits and creating and expanding on that touch language can be used in other ways. Mm. But for basic use, just stick to the clean, simple methods of touch. When you're considering how users are going to be interacting with your app, you want to go back to ergonomics. Everything kind of ties back into ergonomics. Users are going to be using your app based on the kind of content that they're consuming. If it's an app that you put in a lot of data, they're going to be sitting down with both hands on the keyboard, typing in a long email or something like that. If it's a game or if it's going through recipes, they're going to be perhaps holding a Surface tablet with both both hands and using their thumbs to access those controls and to move through the app. They can also often sit there and hold it with one hand and operate with another. And so requiring two hands to operate your app can be inconvenient in some instances. And then also there's a passive way of absorbing your app. If you're watching a movie or if you're reading a long book or something like that, then perhaps you're not even touching your device. You have it propped in front of you and you're just being passive with it. And so considering all of these different ways that people use the devices that your app is appearing on is important. And again, this ties back to people are using surfaces, people are using laptops, desktop computers. They're using several different kinds of screens to interact with your app. There are some spaces on the real estate of your device that sometimes are better for touch than other spaces on there. There are places that are easier to interact with your thumbs, and there are places that are easier to see as you're reading. You can see here in this tablet example on the slide, because tablets are often held with two hands and the thumbs are obscuring the right and the left, that's gonna be the best interaction area. You can see in the white, it says best. Those are the places that are easier grabbed by thumbs. As you move towards the top center, that's gonna be the area that is the hardest to reach with thumbs. Yeah. And so a user might have to switch to one hand holding the device and then another tapping it with another with their other hand. If they rotate to a portrait orientation, again, they're going to be able to reach the areas that their thumbs are reaching most easy. And so in a portrait orientation, because of the center of gravity, they're going to be holding it in the middle. And so having the top areas and the bottom areas really important in a portrait view might not be the best solution. So just remember how your users might be holding the device and what your primary purpose for your app is. And then the same kind of opposite theory goes for where users can see the content the best. Again, if their thumbs are taking up the, I have a surface here, I can just hold it. If their thumbs are taking up the bottom right and left, then naturally the easiest place to read content is right there on the top. And the same goes for portrait view. If I'm holding the device this way, then there are some spots that are gonna be the best places for your important content to be displayed. Let me pop my little surface back out.
Yeah, it's all about ergonomics and scenarios. Like, think about the scenarios and the usage of the app and then match the ergonomics to that, right?
Exactly.
People are going to be holding it. There's going to be hands there. Think about it.
Yeah, and so consider what your app does. If it is absorbing, you know, if it's reading recipes and it's panning through ingredients, then make sure that it's really easy to do that from any sort of touch language. Yeah. Let's talk about a few of the touch patterns that Windows 8 focuses on. There are just some guidelines that they've really tested extensively to make sure that, again, that they're intuitive, that folks learn them very quickly. And those include direct manipulation. As I showed you on my start screen, I got immediate feedback when I grabbed that tile and I drug it. There were no invisible thresholds to that tile reacting. It was an immediate movement when I grabbed it. And so I knew exactly what I was doing when I grabbed it. Now there was a threshold to move it out of a select position and into a movement position, but I understand and I learn immediately what those two are and that, again, I'm getting immediate visual feedback that something is happening and I'm doing it correctly.
Yeah.
These are learnable interactions. Again, folks get walked through Windows 8 when they first open their shiny new device, and they learn these things immediately. They, again, subscribe to that language very quickly, and so they're going to be expecting it throughout the rest of their experience, and that includes all of the apps that they've downloaded. And it reinforces the content, the concept of content over Chrome. The reason that Windows 8 apps are so touch-friendly is because the content itself is touchable. Users can use the content to actually select photos, to zoom in and out of photos. They can use content to grab app bars, pull them in onto the screen. And so you don't need all of those things to exist on screen.
Right.
The headlines are tappable. The content is pannable. You don't need arrows or pagination, those kinds of things. And so it's really made to put, again, content forward. And touch enables that to happen even more easily.
Yeah.
With direct manipulation, your interactions shouldn't require a radical change, again, based on the number of fingers on the screen. This ties back to the fact that humans are imperfect. They may accidentally touch the screen with a couple of fingers, and you don't want there to be high consequence to making that mistake. And so that really ties back into subscribing to the more basic and more simple language that Windows 8 has perfected.
Yeah, and it can, I mean, just... If the action changes based on the number of fingers, which is going to happen anyways, it just kind of makes the touch language less clear. So that's
exactly. That's
why the Windows team did all that work to make it so so clear that whether I'm panning with one finger or two fingers or my entire hand, it's always going to work the same. It's always going to be consistent.
Exactly. Keep your direct manipulation untimed. Again, this ties back into having an expected reaction when you perform the action. Yeah. It's about immediate feedback. You don't need to, even the touch and hold is a very fast reaction. You don't need to.
And it gives you that feedback so you know right away.
Yeah. Exactly. If it happens too fast, people can think maybe they made a mistake.
Yeah.
If it happens too slowly, they can think that nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And so keep your actions untimed, and again, subscribe to the basic interactions that people are already used to right from the start screen, and even in the travel app and the news app, things like that. We've harped on it a little bit already, but visual feedback is of utmost importance. And we'll talk about animation in the next session, but having immediate visual feedback on touch is equally as important. As I just showed you in the ratings in Contoso Cookbook, I immediately know if I have tapped and successfully left 4 whisks for that recipe, or if I need to tap again and leave 3 whisks instead.
Right.
I know immediately if I've selected that text box correctly.
Mm.
And it's confirming and giving me confidence that my actions are working. And again, it identifies whether you've actually missed an intended target. And we'll talk about target sizes and things like that in this presentation as well. Keep actions reversible. Mm. As you noticed, I was able to grab those tiles on my start screen. And if I decided that I didn't really want them on the end of the screen, I could always drag them right back. And a selection item, it's not a permanent action there. And just like in your app, if you tap to go into a recipe, you can always hit that back button and go back in the same way. It's about discoverability, it's about confidence, making users feel safe to explore and go into your app and come right back to a state that they were already in. Why are these touch patterns popular, and why are they insisted on and things like that? Well, there is immediate feedback. Again, we're instilling confidence in users through this really simple language that they're doing the right thing. They're doing the intended thing. There is no invisible threshold. Their interactions are reversible. You can allow any number of fingers, but again, tie back to the fact that Windows gestures are typically 1 or 2 fingers. And then, of course, interactions are untimed.
Right.
There is no consequence to not holding your gesture long enough. Let's talk about targeting. We've mentioned touching and gestures, but what about fat fingers? I love that phrase because it really just goes back to the fact that everybody is human and everybody has different sized fingers.
Right.
And I know that my father, for instance, he could have more trouble on a mobile phone than I might because I have smaller fingers than he does. And Windows 8 uses whole finger contact to target objects. That allows for a little more accuracy when you're tapping and a little more intention when you're tapping a button. You can see here in this example that even though this button has been partially tapped, the whole thing is activated because Windows is using that whole finger contact for target.
Yeah, it's actually calculating the touch based on not, the point like a mouse would have, but actually the shape of a human finger
and
the pressure on the screen,
When we look at target sizes versus successful use of those targets, so target being a button, for instance, you can see that if a target is 30 pixels big, 30 pixels by 30 pixels, for instance, and that's 5 millimeters there on the chart. The success rate is a little bit, let's see, I'm trying to digest this app. this chart. Help me out here, Chris. I haven't looked at this one in just a little while.
Yeah, so the Windows 8 UX team did a ton of research around touch targets. And we had actually, remember when we went through Contoso Cookbook, we were doing a lot of tuning around what touch targets should be. So through research, we learned that 1 in 30 taps, so about 3% of an error rate, would be seen at a 5-millimeter target.
So that's a missed tap.
Yeah, so 3% of the taps would be missed. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it can be very, very frustrating, potentially when you, or especially when you consider the consequence of that touch. Versus if you go up to 7 millimeters, that's 1 in 100, which starts to feel really good. If the user successfully touches the target and gets the expected results 1 out of 100 times, that feels very satisfactory. It can go up even higher if I go 1 in 200 or half of a percent at 9 millimeters. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic. But then those touch targets start to get very, very large.
So 7 millimeters. A lot of real estate.
Yeah, 7 millimeters starts to be kind of the default. So a 40 pixel by 40 pixel button.
Yeah, at that 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Size.
So it's really about tuning the size of the target to the scenario and the consequence of the target.
Exactly. And one of the really amazing things about this chart is that it really points out the vast difference in all of us as individual people.
Right.
You can see that a baby's finger is really kind of the size of that successful touch target, and that's pretty small. Even the tip of my little finger is a little bit bigger than that. But also, basketball players' fingers are much larger.
Right.
They're 100 pixels. That's twice the size of that most successful touch area. And so the average index finger falls around 11 millimeters or 60 pixels for most people. So you can see why that 40 pixel size might be a little more successful, a higher success rate than anything smaller than that.
And from a UX perspective, it's about research and considering the environment that the app's going to be used in. So I'd actually worked on an app that was geared towards professional athletes, and the normal target sizes for the normal population didn't apply because these athletes, a lot of the men on some of these teams were huge, huge athletes with very, very large fingers. So we actually had to adjust for that. And that's, that part of the UX and the user empathy and doing research is what's the audience going to be? Consider, is it the general population or is it a specific population for your app and stuff like that? That was kind of an eye-opener for me.
So that kind of brings us to high consequence and low consequence touch targets. We know that the average is about that 7 millimeter mark.
Yeah.
And that means that your consequences here can be pretty right down the middle. This is an average button that you might tap to cause an action to happen.
Right.
A low consequence button, like our whisks, can be even smaller.
Yeah.
We're looking at 5 millimeters here or going down to 30 pixels in that 100% size. But those whisks, you can immediately change them.
Yeah.
That's a very low consequence action. Whereas, again, if Chris has set up my machine to transfer all of my money to his account, I want that confirmation button to be very large.
Right.
I don't want to accidentally hit the wrong button there.
Right.
And so the higher the consequence, the more clear you want those buttons to be. And also take into consideration the fact that buttons need to be spaced well enough apart from each other so that those touches don't accidentally happen on the wrong button.
Right.
So consider that as your buttons get larger, your space needs to just complement exactly the size of your buttons.
Yeah, and when we were doing Contoso Cookbook, we did think a lot about the size of the buttons for the friend invite, right? So we wanted to make sure that when someone tapped on that, they successfully got the action they intended. I'm either accepting it or I'm rejecting it.
Exactly.
Because there is a consequence. If they meant to accept it and they hit the reject button, then they're going to have to go and refriend that person or send them an invite in order to complete the scenario.
Exactly. Most people are right-handed, so take into consideration that the majority of your population may be right-handed. And I just heard all over the world so many left-handed people groan about that.
Yeah, exactly.
My dad is left-handed, so I'm sensitive to all of that as well. But keep that in mind as people, if they do default to holding the device and touching the screen or even reaching out to touch the screen, it might be right-handed. Let's get into mouse, keyboard, and pen now. As I mentioned before, Windows 8 has worked hard to bring this beautiful touch experience forward in Windows 8, but also they have remembered that many, many people are on machines that don't have touch screens. They have keyboard and mouse, and again, there are power users that are not going to leave that keyboard behind. And so you want to design and build for touch and keep in mind the touch target sizes, the things that are important, the animation indicators, things like that, that are important for touch, but also plan for keyboard and mouse and make sure that you support it really successfully in the way that you're building your app. And this is another opportunity to work really closely with your developer, if you're not the developer, to make sure that your intended behavior is coming across.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that really kind of blew me away the first time I saw Windows 8, is that I could, you know, sit there with a touch tablet and be using the app, and then in this case, I would cradle it with a mouse and a keyboard and use the app in exactly the same way with just the different input advice.
Exactly.
And that just, yeah, it blew me away that I could, the same controls, the same app, and they could work just as well.
Yep.
So you can just reach more of a larger audience.
Exactly. And you want these devices of input to behave as expected. Yeah. You don't want to create a new language for mouse that has been around for forever. You want to make sure that your functionality is accessible either by right-clicking, by hovering over it, by left clicking. You want folks to be able to access all of your features. Yeah. And Windows 8 has brought in a lot of really amazing tools and tricks to make a mouse a really fluid experience in Windows 8, and I can show you some of those. And again, you want to have that same interaction feedback. If something is selectable, you can't really click and drag it with a mouse so much as when you hover over something that is selectable, you can simply highlight it.
Yeah.
It's a really easy thing to do within your app. And so I can show you a few examples now of how Contoso Cookbook runs both with a, well, I guess I can, let me go ahead and show you keyboard things,
yeah,
and I can show you both of those things at the same time, since a lot of folks use both of those, and I don't want to run too far over. The keyboard is, again, huge for an enthusiast audience, but it's also really big for an accessibility tool.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that your app is built properly so that the keyboard navigates through your app in the correct way. Use your tab and arrows key to move through content. That's how the start screen works.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to create a consistent experience with that. You want to enable shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, the Windows key C brings out the charms bar.
Right.
That's something you learn once, and it's available in all of your apps. And then, of course, include shortcuts and tooltips for discoverability.
Yeah, they did a great job of making all of the built-in UI controls not only to be touch-first, but to support mouse and keyboard for free. So the right-click's built in, just like the selection is built in with the cross-swipe. They did a fantastic job, and it kind of frees up my developers and my designers to focus on the app and not have to worry about any of those details.
Exactly.
It's just built into Windows.
Exactly. And I zoomed right past that keyboard action screen because I'm going to show you that in person.
Yeah.
But I wanted to touch on pen. A lot of laptops today come with a pen tool, and that's going to operate in much the same way that a mouse does.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a program that specifically registers the pressure sensitivity of that pen. And so that kind of falls in for free with all of that mouse functionality. And so now I can show you how I can navigate Windows using my mouse. You can see my cursor. It's kind of small. But you can see the second I moved my mouse, I got a scroll bar down at the bottom.
Right.
So I know exactly how big that screen is. And I can use that scroll bar. I can use the wheel on my mouse to navigate around. You can also see this little minus button right here in the bottom right corner. That tells me that I can use semantic zoom on this page. So I can just select with my left click to get right into the last section on that page. I can use right click to select.
Right.
I can use left click. Let me find my Contoso Cookbook app again. I can use left click to do a primary action.
Right.
I can use right click here to get my app bar.
Right.
And then left click to get to that home screen. Again, I can use my wheel to scroll. And if you notice, down here in the bottom right, I also have that little minus symbol. That means that I can use semantic zoom on this page as well. So let's go into a recipe. And you can see here, as I hover over these tiles, I get an indicator that these are selectable. So I can go into the Chinese cuisine here. You can see that this item is marked as a favorite. Let's select it and then mark it as not a favorite. You can see that it behaved exactly the same way as a tap. And if I wanted to, I can go back to my home screen here, and I can switch over to the keyboard. And if I use the tab key, you can see I've already entered into the content here. And if I tab over, I'm sorry, I use the arrow key to tab over, to move over. I can use the tab key to move within that activity box. And I can actually hit the enter key to activate that button and accept Carrie's friend invite. I can use, again, that Windows C key to get back to the start screen. I can also use this the Windows key to switch from the previous app that I was in back to the start screen. And here I can use tab to move between, you can see in the upper right, my profile. So that's a different section of content down into the tiles. I can, again, arrow over. I can use tab, or I can use Windows minus, Control minus, to also access that semantic zoom. I am not a power keyboard user because I have a touchscreen laptop. Why would you use the keyboard?
Yeah.
Exactly. But Control minus and then Control plus to use semantic zoom there. And so you can really navigate through the system using any method of input that you can think of.
Yeah.
And what you want to make sure is that your app is ordered in the proper way so that keyboard navigates through your app properly.
Right.
You want to make sure that it's a natural order.
Yeah.
If there is a series of headlines and you want people to be able to tab through those headlines and then get into that content specifically. So to recap, Windows 8 has created a really clever touch language that works throughout the ecosystem with some basic learning from a user right at the very beginning when they start using Windows 8. And it's made to make your app more intuitive. And if you subscribe to that same language that everyone using Windows 8 is using, then your app is going to be immediately intuitive and immediately learnable.
Mm-hmm.
You can leverage those touch patterns inside of your app to guide your designs. You can see our selection state in the app was custom. We were able to skin that. We were able to make it beautiful. And then, of course, it was optimized for touch. The Chrome is off the screen.
Yeah.
Everything's touchable. You can touch the photos, the recipes, the headers, all those kinds of things. But also, it was super navigable by keyboard and mouse. And so you just have to think about these considerations and make sure that it's built in the right order. And it all comes packaged and ready for you right in Windows 8. And so that was touch. We'll be back in 10 minutes to go over animation, which I've hinted at a little bit during touch.
Yeah.
They kind of go hand in hand to guide your user confidently through Windows 8. So we'll be back.
Awesome.